If I had a car, I'd take it to Bucky's Auto Service Centers to get everything I needed for that car worked on. What do they work on old late model Porsches? What do you think, Tom? They call them?
They're probably not enough of them.
For them to know? Keep them, yeah. Are you questioning the integrity and the knowledge of the Bucky's Auto Service Centers? It sounds like what you're doing, right?
I guess not. I guess I was dead wrong.
Oh, you're dead wrong. It's Bucky's Auto Service Centers with 16 love. Sorry I asked you. They're a paid sponsor, by the way.
Has abortion changed much over the years?
You give everybody, you don't give anybody the benefit of the doubt except for government. The Bucky's Auto Service Centers, of course they could probably work on the Porsche.
Okay, then why did you ask me?
I'm just trying to include you in it because your name's on the show. I can bring Jacob in with his high, squeaky teenage voice, but it's off-putting for
people.
It's
not as high as you when you're excited.
What?
A politician?
All right. Did I dive in already? That explains why I'm all wet. A comedian says the Border Patrol agents pulled him off a Greyhound bus to check his status. And then told him his papers were fake. This is, how do you say his name?
I haven't heard his name pronounced before. Mohamed El-Sheikhi, would be my guess.
He was talking to KPTV about how he originally came to the U.S.
Things really escalated back home to the point where it was, like, very dangerous for me personally to go back. So I.
He was a translator. That's what he went over there for.
I just decided that I'm going to stay here in the U.S. and I just applied for political asylum.
So he applies for political asylum. Things are hot and out of control where he's from, and he does get political asylum.
It took him a long time, but he got it, so he went through legal channels.
Right. Unlike so many that don't. So good for him. And now, so he's on a bus, and he's going to be going from, where's he going, from Portland? To where was he?
He's based in Portland. He did a show up at WSU.
Yeah.
And he was transferring in Spokane to get on a bus to take him to Portland.
Okay.
Things were in Libya were pretty mundane. It was super boring.
This is talking about life in the U.S. So we're just giving you some idea who the comedian is, and we'll tell you his story.
Like, just like your casual dictatorship, you know? Like, government of, like, old people, president for 42 years. He just went around the country, just gave rallies. He had a lot of supporters. He would just talk and talk and talk. And it was just, like, long-winded speeches. And people liked it because he told it like it is. And it was crazy. And he just divided the country, attacked the media. It was very bad. So what I'm trying to say is I'm so happy to be here in 2018 where that doesn't happen. You know? Woo, dodge a bullet there.
Okay.
So he's talking about life in Libya under Gaddafi, I assume.
Right,
then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. And then he's comparing it to, it's so horrible here in the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So apparently he's a comedian.
With humor, though.
What's that?
With humor.
Yeah. So he's on the bus, and what is the story that is getting so much attention on Twitter, Tom?
Okay, so it's a border, customs and border protection officials. We're not quite ICE. It's not quite the same thing as Border Patrol, but customs and border protection agents got on the bus and took him and three other people off the bus and demanded to see their papers. He showed as a proof of citizenship. They accused him of having fake documents. He says, that's not possible, that I only could have gotten this license to perform and this this information or whatever the documents that he provided by going through legal channels, and this is it. And they held him for about 20 minutes and then said, well, they made some calls and said, yes, apparently he did come in legally, but they don't have his asylum granted. Is not established in the records or something. He says, I don't know how that could not be. And they said, you should bring your asylum papers with you at all times. And he just thought that was a bit much. And so he is, since he's one of these young guys who is always on social media, he tweeted out a lot of this, and it's getting a lot of people irritated. And
are we able to point this back towards Trump? Are we able to make this part of Donald Trump's legacy?
Well, I mean, it could be. Now, it depends on how long they've been doing this, but with the heightened border security issues of the Trump administration, I wouldn't be surprised if they're doing this more often or not.
Oh,
but in Spokane, when the Spokane City Council members said that they were appalled that this would happen, they had passed some kind of legislation that would stop federal officials from boarding these private buses It was a Greyhound bus. Mm-hmm. But they said, but it hadn't gotten into effect yet. So I don't know what that means, or it hadn't ever been executed. So I guess the question is, are we comfortable living in a country where people can just be, you know, asked to show their papers, at, you know, willy-nilly? Mm-hmm. And that's the debate we're having in this country. A lot of people think no. A lot of people are mad at Greyhound for allowing the agents to get on the bus. Greyhound says, we're stuck. We have to play by federal rules. Mm-hmm. We think right. that we have to do this. But what they do do is they put an alert on to anybody who gets on the bus and says, if an agent comes on, these are your rights. You don't have to mm-hmm. talk to him. You don't mm-hmm. do anything without a, mm-hmm. an attorney. Right. So Greyhound is in the middle of this, but a lot of people think Greyhound should be pushing back harder.
So they say the CBP say that they're the ones that questioned him at the bus station. They said he presented his documents. They weren't false. They're pushing back on the fact they said that we don't wear body cams, so we don't have an account of what transpired, but we can tell you we've been doing this now for more than 20 years, so I guess that gets Trump off the hook. They questioned him for 20 minutes and then let him go. When I was in Spain, they announced as we got on this bus that we will most likely be pulled over by the police, and they will come on board and ask to see everybody's passports. And then part of the other reason they want to come on and see everybody's passports is because they also want to fine you $130 U.S. for not wearing your seatbelt. And the guy says, and by the way, we're not paying that. You will. So you can put your seatbelt on now, or when they come on, you can scramble and look for it, and they will run over to you without that seatbelt being on there and whack you for $130.
So seatbelts on a bus?
Seatbelts on a bus.
Yeah,
and the guy, and I talked to the guy afterwards. And he said, yeah, it's a moneymaker for they see the tourists coming through in these big buses and stuff, so they whack you if you don't. $130. Huh? Come on now.
Well,
that's Spain for you.
Well, there is a corruption, I suppose, anywhere and everywhere. But the question is this something that we're comfortable with? And you sound like you're comfortable with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with it.
Yeah. See, yeah. It feels like it's unnecessarily hassling people. He's been here for 5 years. He's a practicing, professional, right. And the fact that because he looks different from,
is that why they, did they say that's why they pulled
him
over?
They said that.
Asked to see his papers?
He says people think because he has an accent, they think he might be Hispanic, mm-hmm. that his skin color is slightly dark. They pulled over four people, and it sounded like they were Mexicans mm-hmm. that they were talking to. That it's a kind of a profiling. They didn't say why they didn't have any specific information about this individual. I don't know. It makes me a little uncomfortable.
You're not comfortable with big government.
Unnecessary. Not this kind of government.
No, not this is big government. All right, let's see. Trump is not happy. The former White House aide tells all. Is this another tell-all book? Was this the 10th tell-all book to come out this week? So this guy.
Only two this week. Chris Christie's and this guy.
Okay. Cliff Smith, who Trump says is nothing more than a lackey.
Never knew him. But he feels betrayed anyway. I trusted this guy. Who is he?
He compares Trump to Steve Jobs.
One of the things that I realized is, when you're around Donald Trump, there's something about him. The best way I could describe it is similar to people talk about Steve Jobs when they called it there was like a reality distortion field around Steve Jobs. And when you're around the president, everything seems bigger, everything seems grander, and that could be, there could be good things about that. But there's also kind of this atmosphere that gets created. It's extremely cutthroat. I think every White House is probably tough, but I think especially the atmosphere that has been created there that encourages a lot of the infighting.
Okay. Will anybody buy this guy's book? He says that he's working Trump administration made him realize things about himself. Okay.
The closer that you get to the poles of absolute power, the more distorted your moral compass becomes. And what I found is it revealed a lot about myself, that I wasn't ready for what I was walking into there. And a lot of the scenes in the book are about me kind of losing myself. I mean, one of the scenes that's gotten the most pickup is when the president and I are sitting just off the Oval Office in the private study, and we're creating what kind of a to an enemies list of people in the White House who I felt were basically disloyal to him.
Now, who was on that hit list?
There are a number of my name in the book, Sean Spicer and Reince Priebus. And I got a lot of the people that kind of abandoned him during the campaign, that he was trying to figure out who are these people who are going on background saying negative things about me on my own staff.
I think the best book that came out, I've heard from people, is Woodward's book. They said it's just a page turner. He ripped through the book in like, 3 hours. Just exciting, all sorts of stuff. sources close to, and then got other people to go on the record. This guy's got another chance to cash in, and here he is with his book. His 15 minutes of fame is ticking right now.
Yeah. The question is, are there more? There seems to be, but I'm willing to be historically corrected if this is not the case. There seems to be more tell-all books written in the, I mean, basically we've had 2 years of Trump, and they're already, like, as you said, maybe 10 different books out on this. I don't know if that's typical or not. To give you a sense of the tenor of this book, which I heard described as not a Trump takedown, that it's actually, he's a supporter of Trump, much mm-hmm. like Chris Christie's, but he does have criticisms around the people that he surrounds himself with. The name of the book is called Team of Vipers, instead of a Team of Rivals.
One last thing he says, there's something a lot of people don't realize about Trump.
And one of the points I make in the book is, for him, everything is personal. Everything is a personal relationship. So that manifests itself in foreign affairs. His personal relationship with the foreign leader is more important almost than geopolitics. It's like that with the way he interacts with the staff. It's like that when he has these political vendettas that you think are like, you know, this is kind of a distraction from the main point. But everything for him is deeply personal.
Sounds like anybody I know.
What?
Anybody is in a position of power, or most people in positions of power, take relationships personally. Right. And this guy takes it personally. And it's also part of the if you ever see somebody who has I don't know if he's been diagnosed with narcissist disorder, personality disorder, NPD. But they say part of the problem is that you have a huge, big personality, but then you're easily offended. And he would seem to fit this bill. Easily offended by people's even slightest little, you know, knock against you. And then the person who's got narcissistic personality disorder is unable to be flexible or to adjust or to grow out of criticism to sort of learn to become, you know, less self-centered.
Adjust. Right. He's not willing to adjust to things. Yeah. I mean, I would think that this, especially in the realm of foreign relations, international relations, could be problematic. If you deal with things personally and you have a personal connection with the Russian president or the Chinese president, and you don't with, or with the North Korean, I love the guy, he says, that can foggy up.
Right. Look what Obama did with Netanyahu, right? Those guys hated one another. And when they would sit down at the White House, things are always restrained.
The idea is, though, that he didn't allow that kind of personal animosity, because that was over political animosity. Right.
Well, he sent his people into Israel to be able to defeat Netanyahu. He had his group of people, Save America, whatever that group was that Obama put together.
You make it sound like it's untoward. I mean, people were hired in those campaigns. They hire campaign consultants to do all sorts of stuff in foreign countries. That's allowed. You just can't go the other way. The question is, though, is do you dictate policy, foreign policy, based on how you get along with the leader? And that's where it gets a little dicey, I think.
Let's see. There's a speed limit in Germany, or there is no speed limit on the Autobahn. That's the beautiful thing about driving in the Autobahn. Just get in the right-hand lane. I was in the left-hand lane. We were in a minivan, and we were going about 90. We had the thing floored, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and it must have been about a half a mile back. I saw these big flashes, and I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And my buddy said, get over. We got over just in time. He said, car went by, must have been 130 miles an hour, 140 miles an hour, some Ferrari, or couldn't even tell what it was, went by so fast.
70% of the Autobahn in Germany has no upper limit.
It's the best way to get around Germany.
Well, it's also nerve-wracking.
Well,
they say that. I mean, people are going 150 to 200 miles an hour on that thing, and there are more accidents, there are more deaths, and most importantly, because this is not why they're doing it, most importantly, the emissions concerns are such that there now is a movement in Germany that wants to call for speed limits, to lower the limits for safety and for environmental reasons. And if you spend much time in Germany, they are very environmentally conscious. You know, they have all these, they're the number one recyclers. They have a lot of they use solar energy more than any other country in Europe. They're very high on that, and this is like the latest venture. Mm-hmm. However, there's immediate pushback from the car industry, obviously, in Germany, but from a lot of Germans see the Autobahn is part of their national identity.
Right.
And this article, interestingly, it's being compared to talking gun control in the United States is a bit like, you know, is what it's like to argue about speed limits. And there was such a strong pushback when it was proposed in like an early draft of a suggestion from a committee that's nowhere near actually coming to fruition. There was such pushback that they guarantee that for at least the next year and a half, there will be no talk of speed limits on the Autobahn.
Good. They say that yes, there are accidents. And when the accidents occur, they're a lot deadlier because they're going on epic mode.
That's right.
But as far
they're
as
only just, deadly, I think.
But I think if you look at the numbers, we have more on our roads than they do. It's just that when they when someone hits somebody else, everybody's wiped out. Nobody survives the things.
Okay, right. Yeah, I wonder if that's the case. One of the arguments in Germany against this speed limits is this, the reason we take such pride in our cars, we have the best cars, and if we suddenly are relaxing our standards because we're known out, we can't go as fast as we want, then maybe that'll hurt our market and our branding. When they said, that's ridiculous, because the United States, you know, German cars are as, you know, high established as they can be, and it's not going to affect their reputation.
Well, the nice thing is for Germany in 2000 is when they decided they were going to go all green. They've started backing off that. They realized, wow, the cost of our energy has gone way up. It's not having any effect. We're not keeping up with climate change agreements that we made in the Paris talks. And in 2022, they said they were going to get rid of all their nuclear power plants, close them all down. And then they realized, oh, crap, we don't generate enough with wind and solar, so we might have to keep some of those nuclear power plants keep going.
Well, their heart's in the right place.
That's all that matters.
Aren't quite
that's
there.
Doesn't the results aren't as important as the feelings. Meet the man. No,
the results just are slower coming, John. That's
oh, really? Okay. Yeah. You're never going to get them because you can't increase the wind. Meet the man behind the wheel of Wikipedia. Good for this guy. You need people like this. He doesn't get
that's
paid,
true.
But he does have a nice life for himself. His parents subsidize his work, and we all get a chance to enjoy the time he spends.
Okay,
right?
First off, he's not living off his parents. He's living at his parents' house, but he has a full-time job.
What's his job?
He works in records and information at the U.S. Customs and Border Protection. He's the guy that couldn't find the asylum card for that Portland comedian. No, he has a full-time job, so it's not like he's a complete, you know, leech off his parents
all
sitting
right
in his basement doing Wikipedia, which is why I know the picture you're trying to create. I do wonder about him. I can't tell how old he is, but he looks like I would guess he's at least 30 and maybe older. But he has written 35,000 original articles.
I have CBS talking about
and
it.
And edited 3 million of those articles. And he loves
what
opera.
Is this?
Yeah, this is him performing.
Yeah.
It's one of his hobbies.
On the grounds of one of the most historic churches in Virginia, you're hearing a rendition of an ancient Georgian solo. It's a cherished song.
Have we even anything to compare this to? it's just to the ear, it sounds tinny and shrill.
His voice?
Yes.
Oh, it's echoey in a church. It sounds vaguely, you know, like a
Gregorian tramp.
It sounds fantastic, and he's a huge opera fan. This guy's multi-talented. Stop mocking him, John.
It sounds like Father Todd from St. Joe's doing the 5:30.
Yeah.
On the grounds of one of the most historic churches in Virginia, you're hearing a rendition of an ancient Georgian solo. It's a cherished song in Stephen...
Talked so long, I don't have time to get to the start. Look at the time it is. I'm going to cut ahead. Let me just hold on.
On disc.
Oh, God, here we go.
Living with his parents in the home he grew up in, he's always remained true to his interests.
How did your parents react when you first told them, hey, Mom, Dad, I edit online encyclopedia pages?
I think for a long time there was an attitude of, that's a nice idea. The boy's crazy.
That may have changed when Time magazine named him one of the top 25 most influential people on the internet.
Wow.
There you go. Hey, right. See? Applaud him. If he was your son, how would you feel?
I would be embarrassed that the story is on the radio right now. Shay.
He's not even your son, and you're embarrassed the story's on the radio
listen,
right
good
now.
Good for him. Somebody has to do those. I always wonder,
Wikipedia
like, who
is
does
dependent
Wikipedia?
On people like that.
Right.
You've been doing this for 13 years.
I like the fact that it's sort of self-policing, that everybody gets on the
that's not true,
and other people add things. And isn't it amazing how fast people put stuff up on Wikipedia?
Yeah.
I mean, it happens, and like an hour later, they'll have it on there.
Yeah.
We'll come right back to Tom and Curly Show right here on Cairo Radio. Online Trading Academy, text line 98973. Hello to my friend Kay in Hawaii, who wrote to me, please stand up. I was sitting down during the show, Tom. She said, no, no, not you, not you. No, Kay doesn't know you. Red button, no. Red button allows you to broadcast like a professional.
I just want Kay to see how much taller I am than you. That's why you don't stand up.
Kay, no friend of yours, by the way.
Does that mean she doesn't like me?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Not you as a person. Somebody came up to me on Saturday at the... Ocean Shores thing and said, oh, I can't stand Tom. And I said, let me tell you something. He is the hardest guy to dislike. You might dislike his policies, and you might not like him as a person. I get that. But I'm just telling you right now, very, very, very difficult to dislike him as a human being. You can dislike, separate his crazy world that he lives in.
No, you can't.
I was speaking.
For me.
Yes.
In defense of me.
Yes, absolutely. All right. anyway, so here we are now, both standing.
Yes.
So this, I didn't realize they had done a Ted Bundy movie back in 2002.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, same sort of thing. As, you know, I don't know. It was, I guess it was one cable outfit or something had it. Now the question is Zac Efron, who is playing Ted Bundy, people are concerned that it almost romanticizes this serial killer too much.
Yes. There's a lot of pushback because they actually cast a pretty boy to play Ted Bundy. The problem with the pushback is, Ted Bundy was a pretty boy. The idea that Ted Bundy was charming and, you know, sort of sexually alluring to women was half of the charm. Right. And so the pushback is you shouldn't make somebody like Ted Bundy seems like a romantic hero. And this movie, and again, none of us have seen the movie. We have seen the trailer. This movie doesn't sort of get in the way of his crimes. What it does, though, is show how he manipulated women into, you know, be feeling like they were in safe hands, and instead they were in murderous hands.
Well, that was part of the problem, because if the women would look at the guy, he's so good. He doesn't look like a serial killer, right? And that's how he would get their trust, and he would woo them and seduce them. I can't understand why this is even a story. Washington Post picks it up. Are we making too much of the looks by having Zac Efron be the Ted Bundy? But that is important to the whole story.
Yeah. In fact, there's a woman who's written a counter to that who herself, she's a best-selling author and has written a book that was one of her third novel, I think, was inspired by a Ted Bundy-like person. They said, the whole idea of serial killers is that we think they're all going to be pockmarked and, you know, just sort of gross human beings. And the idea is that is because we have that notion in mind, we are more susceptible to, oh, well, he doesn't look like a serial killer. He doesn't look like the boogeyman. He looks like this great guy. You know, this the boy next door charmer. And he says that would be the disservice to present him as this ogre. You have to present him the way he is. Now, this has been an argument that's been kicking around Hollywood, I think, from the get-go. The gangster movies, they made Jimmy Cagney, he was heroic. Even though he was a gangster, people really liked him. Their whole gangster movies were because the gangsters were charismatic. I remember in the 60s when Bonnie and Clyde came out. My God, Bonnie and Clyde were these mass killers. They drove around, you know, the country killing people, and yet it was cast. Faye Dunaway and
Warren
Beatty were cast, and you couldn't get a more glamorous couple. And yeah, they met a grisly end, but it's the if you glamorize the violence more than the individuals, I think then you have a better knock against it, for instance. But we've always responded, I think, to there's something glamorous about criminals, whether they're good looking like Ted Bundy or not, and that is something in our human psyche I think we ought to maybe grapple with a bit more.
Well, didn't the papers sort of do that thing with Bonnie and Clyde? Didn't they make it out about this couple that was driving around shooting up banks and killing her? Didn't the newspaper sort of make the same sort of thing they did with Butch Cassidy's Sundance Kid?
Yes, right? There you go.
Same thing.
Yes.
And, or they'll do the same thing with bank robbers, that the FBI will give them a name like, you know, the Gentleman Bandit. And it's like, oh, the Gentleman Bandit, right?
Yeah.
He's still carrying a gun and maybe shooting some people, but it is the storytelling, and in order to add glamour to a story, like they do with some, even some of the way they portrayed, as you mentioned, who was the famous gangster in Boston that
Boston Strangler?
No, he was a gangster. He was a gangster, okay. And I forget the guy's name that played him, and I think he recently died. Bugsy.
Oh, I was going to say
Whitey.
Bugsy.
Whitey.
Oh, Whitey.
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes.
Yeah. Same sort of thing, that he had been glamorized as well.
Bulger.
Yes, Whitey Bulger. But he was a horrible human being, and awful, had no soul, killing people.
Played by Jack Nicholson in The Departed.
Right. I would play a cut, but I can't because I am so far away from the buttons. And I want to be able to get down and turn down the headset, Tom, but I can't reach that either.
And why is that? Maybe you should explain, because I know most of our listeners are watching us at this point. But for the few that aren't, you are now standing on your chair to establish your height advantage over me.
Yes, because I stand, Tom sits. And then I had mentioned at the beginning of this segment that Kay appreciated me sitting
and
or
doesn't
standing
like me.
And doesn't like you. But then and then you stood up for some reason to try to do this thing. Oh, I tower over you physically. But I don't make any comments about the rest of you. And so I stood up on the chair in order just to reassert, you know, yes. the height difference.
That's and now right. you can't play Whitey Bulger.
I have
clips
to bend down in order to talk into the microphone.
That's right. How's your back holding up right now?
All right, let's do this. Let's both agree that we'll go back to our normal positions. Okay?
Okay. What's it going to...
That would be you sitting down.
First?
Come on, Tom. Please.
It's an excellent balance
come
exercise.
Come on, don't look like I could fall off this thing and hit my head.
No. Hey, then we could both be injured.
All right, here we go. All right, here we go. So, you have any problem with him being good-looking? No.
No. Now, I do think that we are in danger of romanticizing serial killers because we have this... You know, this passionate interest in serial killers. But look at Jack the Ripper, long before not only social media, but long before any kind of broadcast media existed, Jack the Ripper became this huge thing, and people have this fascination with it. And I think it's unfortunate, but it's just part of human nature.
Yes.
We are fascinated by people that are living on that, you know, on that kind of precipice of, you know, of danger, of getting caught. And they're always lurid. I mean, Ted Bundy, he would rape the women, he would kill the women and maybe even dismember them. For some reason, we're fascinated by the extremes of human behavior
right.
and such. And so I do think there's a legitimate argument to be made about does media romanticize them. But to criticize Zac Efron for being too good looking to play somebody like Ted Bundy is the wrong argument to make.
Well, to make a story more interesting, you take the ogre and you give it a heart. Even King Kong. Well, knocking down planes, and it still had a heart when the woman's laying in his hand, right? So it's the idea you take a monster and make it slightly lovable, or you take someone that's lovable and you put the monster element in. You want that conflict to be existing within the individual to make that character more interesting to watch.
Yes, exactly.
But if you really want, what you could do is you could go on Dr. Phil. There's a YouTube clip. Woman describes the traumatic escape from Ted Bundy, explaining how he was choking the life out of her and beating the hell out of her. And apparently somebody just came along and ended up stopping the whole thing from happening. I mean, do some research on the guy and know what he did and how he tortured people and would sneak into that the sorority house and kill those women. And, you know, then you sit there and watch the movie, get some idea who this individual really was.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key is that if you, and they claim in this movie that they do not show the murders, because that, I think, if you're romanticizing the murder, oh my God, look at the way that, because there is a kind of aesthetics of violence, unfortunately, and that may be a, you know, a moral concern for some people, but certainly not the casting.
All right. Are you going to watch it?
I don't know. You know, if it's handy, maybe. I feel like I'm busy.
Well, you got that. What do you promote all the time? What's the thing you?
Xfinity.
Xfinity.
Well, yeah. If it shows up, that's right. Is it? It's broadcast on TV, isn't it?
Can't you just call for it? Can't you just say that into your phone or into the air and it just finds it?
Show me extremely wicked, shockingly evil, and vile,
and then it'll come up.
Yes, but right now it's played at the Sundance Film Festival, so it hasn't been released yet, but eventually it'll show up.
I wanted to talk to you about that Sundance Film Festival and that Michael Jackson thing that's happening. Have you seen that, or will you see that? They asked for additional security in Park City. They said they expect a lot of Michael Jackson fans to come and protest, and it could get violent out in front of the theater that was showing Michael Jackson as a child molester.
Yeah, it's a documentary that investigates all of the claims that were made against him, and so it's seen as an attack on Michael Jackson. I haven't seen the film yet, but a lot of Michael Jackson fans are up in arms.
Here we go. We come right back. His first mistake was robbing banks. His second mistake is how he decided to get away from all of it. This is sort of a stupid crook. Plus, hey, are we going to get to the story about the duck?
If you really want to, we can try to find
it. I pitched it.
I don't understand it.
What do you mean you don't understand
it? He pitched it back.
You can't pitch it back.
It's just a duck that lives on the
suddenly there's standards for animal stories. I forgot what show I was on. We'll be right back. Andrew's dug deep into the audio file here. Weird songs no one can identify.
Retro.
Yeah. K-Tel. Remember K-Tel Records?
I do.
Yeah. That was good old days. And they'd have play a record. And remember this one. And who can forget this one? And you get the record. You go like, oh, yeah. All the songs I only wanted to hear once. Let's see. His first mistake was robbing a bank, said the police. And then he decides to get away. Getting away is important.
Yes.
And there's getaway cars.
Getaway drivers.
Right? Then you have, sometimes you do the thing where you bump into the guy and you just pass over the bag and then he's going and then you drop the clothes and you have a whole getaway. That's a big part. So how am I going to get in? How am I going to get the cash? How will I get out? And how do I get away? This guy in the Washington Post does a story that he had an ingenious plan.
Yeah, he got away on something that was electric, so it went a lot faster than your regular scooter. He got an electric scooter, and it was one of those jump electric scooters, which is owned by Uber. It's one of the rideshare scooters, and it took them a few weeks to track it down. But they realized that somebody reported they thought they saw him get on a scooter, and in order for those scooters to work, you have to have your ID, you have to have your credit card information, and your cell phone number, and so. Eventually, they decided that they could track this down. They took pictures of him when he was inside the bank. Obviously, the bank had pictures. And there was a video of him on a scooter. And they took video of him outside his apartment. And they realized, that's the same guy.
Huh.
So they arrested him a few weeks later because they said, we used to have fingerprints. Then we had DNA. And now we have digital footprints that, can sort of secure a criminal's arrest. Very efficiently. And he's not the only one. There have been two other examples. I think it was in Baltimore where people used electric scooters and were tracked down by that very
take the electric scooter. Just anybody's going to rob a bank. Take the electric scooter and after you use it, throw it in the water.
Yeah.
Well, they'd find it too there probably. Yeah. I assume they would count. Here's the other thing. Why are people that rob banks so dumb? Here's a guy, here's an example one right here. So the guy robs the bank and then goes back to the bank that he's robbed. So they're doing a live news report. And watch this.
A suspect fleeing from the bank after police say he robbed it again.
Just 24 hours ago, this bank in North...
That guy right there.
What?
That's the robber.
Oh, that's the robber. This is live TV, folks. That's the robber. Just went by, according to the bank employee. So... I got to go here and call 911. I'll talk to you later.
And he ends up leaving. So the guy goes, he robs the bank and then comes back to the bank.
Well, they always say that's a psychological impulse to return to the scene of the crime.
To
see what it's like, the impact you're having on the world. And that's how they trick you up.
We were doing a live broadcast for Northwest Harvest out in front of a bank out near IKEA or wherever that out there. Muckleteo or no, where is it? Tukwila or something like that. And I'm there with Ken Kirkpatrick, who's the president of U.S. Bank. I'm interviewing him, and you're talking about how U.S. Bank is collecting cans and giving money to Northwest Harvest and why it's such a great cause. And while we're on the air live, someone robs the bank. And then the FBI wanted our tape to be able to see, because you could see the guy coming out of the bank. So while we're doing the thing, the same exact thing happened. All of a sudden, someone goes, what? What? And Ken Kirkpatrick goes, wow, we just got robbed. Right in the middle of Northwest Harvest.
Did you have any trouble turning over the tape?
No,
you just turned it over. Because that's the thing that Uber immediately turned it over since it was a police investigation as well.
Guys. All right, come right back. Tom McCurley right here on Power Radio. Oh, my gosh, look at it. Hey, Howard Schultz apologizes for letting the Sonics get away.
Too late.